You've tuned in to Columbia Calling, your first stop for everything you want to know about Columbia. How and where to invest, where to visit. From the Pacific to the Caribbean, the Andes Mountains to the Amazon jungle, Columbia has a slice of everything. Shooting from the hip, answering the questions that need answering. Here's your host, the journalist and hotelier Richard McCall, shedding some light on the fashionable South American destination of Columbia.
That was Toto Lamos Pocina. Some of you have asked her song El Pescador, which gives the intro and outro to Columbia Calling, this podcast hosted by me, Richard McCall, from various locations in Colombia, but at the moment in Mompos, Bolivar, in the north, in the hot, sweaty lowlands. This is episode 285 of the Columbia Calling podcast, and in segment three of the show, we'll be talking to very special guest Wally Broderick, who will take some time out of his busy day at the Externado University to talk to us about this new project he's involved in, which is craft beer brewing with ex-FARC combatants in Tolima. So that's a pretty cool project to hear about. The beer that's being produced is called La Roja, and it has a telltale revolutionary red star on the front, so you'll know when you see it. I believe it's for sale in various locations in Bogota's Candelaria district, so you know, look out for this Irish red La Roja beer on sale there. So we're going to talk a little bit more about this and, you know, what it's like to work with former combatants reincorporating into civilian life and, you know, what they're facing up to. Very interesting stories to be heard with Wally Broderick there. And of course, just shortly, I'll be leaving you in the very capable hands, as I say every week, of Adrian Alsima, who can provide us with a week's update of news in Colombia, provided by Colombia Reports, of which he is, of course, the director. So I'm going to leave you now, shortly, and we'll be back in segment three talking to Wally Broderick, who some of you will know has been on the show before. He was on episode 135, so several years ago now, and talking about prisons in Colombia. And that episode was actually incredibly popular because it was something very different to discuss on Columbia Calling at that point. Anyway, I'm going to leave you now with Adrian Alsima with the week's news update, and I'll be back in segment three talking to Wally Broderick. Thank you for listening, and don't go away.
My name is Adrian Alsima, and this is the news for Columbia Calling for August 6, 2019. Coca cultivation in Colombia dropped slightly between 2017 and last year, according to the UN. The Colombia chief of the UN's Office on Drugs and Crime said Friday there were 169 hectares of coca registered in December 2018. This is 2 hectares less than the year before. The UNODC chief warned that in some areas there was an increase in coca per square kilometer. This could mean that cocaine production has gone up. The FARC deserter who killed his commander and revealed the fake demobilization of a non-existent FARC front was assassinated on Saturday. Rojas deserted from the FARC in 2008 after killing Ivan Rios, the commander of the former guerrilla group's northwestern bloc. He later revealed that the 2006 demobilization of the Cacica La Gaitana front was fake. The criminal investigation that followed spurred former Peace Commissioner Luis Carlos Restrepo to flee the country in an attempt to evade justice. Colombia's finance minister said he wants to increase the government's 2020 budget by 9% to $84 billion. Minister Alberto Carrasquilla calculated the available budget using growth estimates that are considerably higher than those of the central bank and the IMF. Congress will debate the budget in September and is likely to make drastic changes to prevent a deficit. The United States Senate confirmed Philip Goldberg as the country's new ambassador to Bogota. Confirmation comes almost 2.5 years after President Donald Trump requested the resignation of outgoing Ambassador Kevin Whitaker. The career diplomat will have to try to manage the relations between the two countries that are both suffering governability crises because of tensions between their executive and legislative branches. President Ivan Duque traveled to China this week in an attempt to boost agricultural exports to the Asian giant and increase Chinese investment. The president successfully made deals to increase banana exports and open the Chinese market to avocados. These deals are worth approximately $40 million. Duque failed to convince the Communist Party to lift a ban on Colombian meat imports or secure a significant increase in investment. Colombia's 2019 regional election campaign has begun and immediately caused turmoil within political parties. Opposition leader Gustavo Petro was fiercely criticized for his endorsement of Bogota mayoral candidate Holman Morris, who has been accused of domestic abuse and sexual harassment. The Green Alliance split over their endorsement of Antioquia governor candidate Aníbal Gaviria. He is suspected of ties to paramilitary groups, and the Gaviria family has been sentenced 7 times to return land they had dispossessed from displaced conflict victims. The Democratic Center dumped their candidate running for mayor in Bogota, after which Angela Garzón resigned from the ruling party. That's the end of this week's news bulletin. Now back to Colombia Calling with Richard McCoy.
And we're back. This is Colombia Calling. I'm Richard McCall. This is episode 285 of the Colombia Calling podcast. We're still here in Mompox or Macondo, up on the Caribbean coast. It's stiflingly hot, as always, up here. It never changes. Before I wax lyrical about that, let's talk about our repeat guest on the Colombia Calling podcast. His name's Wally Broderick. Those of you who've been listening for a decent amount of time will know that he was on episode 135. So 150 episodes ago, he was on talking about prisons and prison care and the state of prisons in Colombia, and it was a very popular show. And well, Wally's an interesting guy. He's now involved in a project making beer, but not ordinary beer. And I don't want to take away from his thunder. So let's just welcome Wally, who's at the Externado University at the moment, and he'll be talking to us about this new enterprise that he's working on. Welcome back on Colombia Calling, Wally.
Hi, Richard. Thank you. And hello, everybody. I hope you enjoy my story about the peace beer, the beer for peace that we are making with ex-warriors of the guerrilla, of the ex-army, FARC army, the ex-guerrilla, that are now developing their new lives, their new lifestyles, and they're looking for options as to not, so they don't have to kind of fall back into violence, and they're willing to learn new skills and create new products and become part of society. So that's it's a great thing that they're doing, I believe. I mean, I've been part of it in the sense that I've been kind of contributing with my knowledge of beer making. I'm a home brewer. I'm a half brewer. I mean, make beer in small batches, and I try to make good quality beer. I've been at it for about 3 or 4 years. And I had an opportunity to go to one of the areas where the ex-guerrilla are training and developing their productive enterprises, and I suggested that they should make beer and develop a beer brand, and it's going on well. I mean, it's been a successful project so far. It's been going on for about a year. In September, it's been a year since we started. And it's a well-known brand in many parts of Bogota, for instance. We get orders from around Colombia. We even had some people from abroad having tasted the beer, and there's a possibility of developing a little export business as well. So that's all been very exciting and very moralizing for these ex-fighters, men and women who left their guns to join civilian life and to try to make a less violent Colombia and a more fair Colombia for everybody, you know?
It's amazing and really uplifting to hear about something of this nature and bringing these now ex-combatants, reincorporated combatants back into society in what was, you know, in this creative sense. So tell us a little bit more about this. How did you get involved in this project? Was it one day you woke up and went, I'm going to make beer with the ex-FARC?
Well, I had the lucky or had a connection with somebody who had been in the FARC and who was now part of the organization of one of the areas. He was a school friend of mine in secondary. We became very good friends, and then we parted ways because he joined the FARC and I joined the guerrilla, and I stayed as a civilian, even though I was kind of politically active, but I wasn't that way inclined to say. But I also have Irish citizenship. I'm Colombian Irish, and I had the opportunity to leave the country, and I stayed in Europe for about 10 years. So when I returned, I tried to find out about my old friend, and he was kind of lost, and we came across each other. We met once while he was doing his job, his work. I didn't want to ask too much. I didn't want to get too involved because he was kind of rough, like sensitive information that he would handle and stuff like that. So I kept my distance, but eventually he fell prisoner. And then I decided to support him, and I went to prison. That's why we did the piece on prisons, is because I became very familiar with prison reality in Colombia. I visited Colombian prisons for about 11 years, maybe once a month, every 2 months, month more or less, and I met a lot of people in prison, and I got to know a lot about the prison reality in Colombia. But eventually my friend became paid his sentence and was freed, and he was involved. He got involved again in with his organization with the FARC while they were in the middle of the peace process, and he became part of that process, and he became in charge. He was given charge of one of the areas where the ex-combatants were developing their new lifestyles, developing their new life projects, and that's how I got to have an option of to have an opportunity to go and see how I could help. My first inclination was English teaching. I'm an English teacher by profession, so I thought English as a language could be a useful skill for many of these people who are developing tourism projects, which is a great, still is, and is a very important kind of option in the development of enterprises and jobs and workplaces for many of these people, because they know the region so well, they know the areas, they know so much of the country that has been unexplored because they've been there. Letting new people in, but now there's a new tourism potential, and it's great. But then I realized after these visits that the potential of tourism was a kind of in a long-term kind of project. They needed something more hands-on, more tangible. And I've been making beer at home with friends, and as any beer maker, craft beer maker, we always dream of developing a great product and maybe a business someday. And I thought there was an opportunity for these people to develop a business, craft beer business. I don't know, you probably know that Colombia is starting to develop a craft beer culture, similar to maybe Argentina or the States or Ireland or England or so many places that have been in the last 20, 30 years developing these small businesses, small local neighborhood or town industries that have really created a great variety and a great reinforcement or there's been a new culture of local economies. Many towns, maybe many restaurants, and many areas have been developing their own products, and that's been great for many local economies. So we decided to go for it, and we started making very small batches of beer with a few of the individuals there, with a few men and women. We actually, the first workshop that we made was, there was like 20 people involved in from the area, of all ages, and mainly young men, some young women, some older men. And that was the first beer, the first batch of beer we made. We made a workshop with about 20 people, of which five kind of completely involved, and they really were very, very enthusiastic and decided to continue and make more beer. And so we made a second batch, and we produced like six cases of beer, six boxes of beer, which we sold to friends or and family and relatives, and it was very well received. And so we developed the recipe of the beer, and we created a beer and eventually developed a brand. There's a story behind the naming of the beer. The beer is called La Roja. La Roja. Why? Well, for many reasons, it's a red ale, Irish ale style beer, which is kind of very balanced between the malty and the hoppy flavors. And it's got a nice toasted kind of malt taste to it. So, and the color is very red. So, in one of the workshops, I jokingly said, "Okay, let's make a Roja Rebelde." So, giving insinuating a bit that the name was about the ideology, the socialist inclination of the people who were making the beer, and they really liked that. Even although there was a big discussion over whether the name should be La Comunera or La Marquetalia, because they're very emblematic kind of names for them. But La Roja became kind of a very accepted and liked name. It was first called La Roja de la Montaña, and then it stayed as La Roja Cerveza Artesanal, and that's what it's being registered as, La Roja Cerveza Artesanal.
And of course with that telling star on the front as well.
Yes, yes, absolutely. The star is definitely very, very important, and it's been great for the people in the region where it's been made, in the area. It's given them great morale to see how well received, how many people have appreciated and bought the product and liked the product and liked not only the product but the story behind the product. The story of the people who are making the product. So there was a fear of a very kind of conservative country like Colombia of the product being maybe not well received and a lot of people having resistance to having a product made as such a popular product, because there's a lot of products that are being made by and produced by people who let their arms, who are in the peace process, who've joined the peace process. They are cultivating a lot of crops and potatoes and cane sugar and coffee. Coffee is being exported. But beer has got this kind of mystical aura about it. What we've discovered is that if a community can make beer, they're kind of at a another level, you know. If you can make beer, the rest is is easy, you know. The rest is you can make anything. If you can make beer, you're safe. You've got all you need, you know what I mean? So that's more or less, I think, the feeling. Yeah.
So give me a bit of a background. Like, so you with your friend who was, let's say, involved in the guerrilla and spent 11 years in jail, then got out, then re-involved in the guerrilla, and then became in charge or helping this, I guess, a zona de transición. Where exactly is the beer made?
All right, yes, yeah, I forgot to tell you. It's in the zona de transición, or the name is zona de entrenamiento, training and reincorporation or reintegration area. It's changed the nomenclature. Yeah. It's in Tolima y Colón, so it's a little town in the border between Cundinamarca and Tolima, in the mountains that come down from Sumapaz.
Wow.
The Sumapaz Paramo basically finishes there. And it's a very beautiful and spectacular mountainous region.
So the water used in the beer comes from those pristine springs in the mountains.
Exactly. That's another important plus of our beer, yes.
Yeah, it's not coming from the Salto de Tequendama then.
Absolutely not. No, it's straight right down from the Sumapaz, which was an area that was one of their strongholds, you know, for a very long time. It's very close to a region that they know very well, and as I was saying before, it has a great potential for ecotourism.
Yeah.
And it's hiking and
Camino de los Secuestrados through Sumapaz. But so, I mean, you got together the people who wanted to work on this, and you've got men and women, and they're all involved. And I have to talk about the basics, because, you know, I've met guerrillas, I've been to the zonas de transición, or what are they called now, entrenamiento and reincorporación. I've done these things and interviewed. But for people out there not knowing or not having met, like, you know, former combatants, how do they prefer? Do they amongst themselves? Do they refer to one another in their aliases, by their aliases, or have they switched back, let's say, to their original given names on their cédulas?
No, I think out of habit they continue calling themselves as they had before. You know, out of habit. And many of them prefer still using their aliases because Colombia is still not completely out of the violence that it's coming from. So many people continue using their aliases, but many are also proud and hope to be able to use their names, their birth even names. So you kind of use both when referring to them. Among themselves, they call each other comrade.
Mm-hmm.
And that's kind of a very...
What are the best names you've come across then? What are the most sort of evocative of the guerrillas?
There's a few. Well, the main man with the beard, the man who's really headed the project in the area, uses the alias of Adriano. Adriano as one of the emperors, right?
Uh-huh.
One of the Roman
emperors.
And he's quite a character. He's very friendly. He's about 60 years old, but you wouldn't imagine it if you saw him. He looks like 50, he looks 45. He's very fit. Been in the guerrilla 25 years, basically almost half of his life. He joined the guerrilla rather late, but he was in there for a long, long time, and he scaled up to being one of the kind of mid commands. He was in charge of many troops, and he's got a very strong personality. I mean, it's kind of a bit overwhelming sometimes working with him, because he's very, very sure of himself and very kind of strict with his things. You don't want to mess with him. but he's completely strict.
Yeah. And Wally, what do they call you? Have they created an alias for you?
It's a common nickname for prof, for teachers here. It's Profi. I am El Profi.
Profi.
Yes.
That's all right.
Yeah.
It would be cool though if you were like El Cervecero or something like that.
I'm just El Profi. I'm El Profi.
El Profi. Just. Do they then, I mean, you know, because so these guys are reincorporating back into civilian life, but do they discuss their politics with you then? Do they discuss what they learned in the jungle? Do they discuss how they see the world now that they're back fully exposed to it?
Yeah, absolutely. They're very kind of firm in their beliefs. And they're very strongly active in their political life. They all want to participate politically. They feel that that's what they've earned after all this time and all the sacrifice they've gone through or whatever. And they feel they earned the right to voice their ideologies. Even though you speaking to them, you can find there's a lot of maybe naivety sometimes in some of their views, I would say. Very romantic kind of views of society, of the society they imagine, they romanticize Cuba and Venezuela still now, even after what's going on, which is understandable in a way. I mean, they were kind of brought up, they were educated, they were a bit dogmatic in that sense, but they've got this. On the positive side, I see that they are pushing or they are tending towards or they want to develop a different type of economy or more communal, collaborative, you would say, kind of businesses. For instance, La Roja, which is the business that they've developed from the help of teaching them how to make beer. They've developed an association, which is a non-profit association. So they decided to create a non-profit kind of organization where the beer, the profits that are made with the beer eventually will be invested in other productive projects and in other areas of the or part of the community where they need like care for children or the elderly or whatever. That will be some of the social objective of the association, rather than just making money for somebody's benefit. And obviously, the most important aim or objective at the moment is to develop solid, stable and long-term workplaces where people can have a security and can be sure that they can have a good work situation, a good salary, a good income for and develop their families. You know, they're starting to have children. When you go to these three areas, it's, I suppose you've noticed if you've been that you've got a very interesting population where you've got all adults and babies between 0 and 3 years old that have been born in the last 3 years since they moved into the region, you know?
Yeah, this is the articles written about the baby boom in the FARC, which have come out in most of the international press, of course. You know, one thing I'd like to ask about this, though, is, of course, this time in Colombia is pretty worrying, and I know that the ex-combatants have that number, which increases week in, week out, of, their comrades who are losing their lives or being assassinated, being killed. That number is like tattooed into their foreheads and onto their very, their souls. They know that number. They are very aware of the risks that might confront them. At this moment in time, like Adriano and your other beer makers, how do they feel? What are their comments on this situation?
Well, they're full of fear not for themselves and their lives. You know, they've got a very kind of relaxed attitude towards death. That you, I mean, at a certain stage, we've been covered by press, and I, as their teacher, have been kind of named in a lot of articles and news. And sometimes I get a little nervous, you know. and I express my fears sometimes to Adrian. He says, come on, relax, you're going to die of something someday, so might as well die for a good reason, you know. And that's kind of his very easy going attitude in that sense. And yes, of course, there's constant fear of the process kind of breaking down, and however, they're definitely very firm in their position, in their desire not to go back to the arms.
So that, you know, they've actually voiced this to you. That we don't want to go back to the Monte. We're out now.
Yeah, no, they have a very firm conviction that the way is not the armed way. They've tried it for so many years. They didn't achieve it. Decided as a whole, as a group, they're going into civilian life, and they're going to struggle in a political world in the political arena, and not in guns.
An immensely positive message coming out of you know, your experience with these guys in Tolima, on the Tolima-Cundinamarca border. It's an immensely positive experience hearing this from them. No, they don't want to go back to the Monte. They are committed to the peace accord. They're committed to making their beer and then, redirecting the funds into social projects within their community, is what I understood from what you were saying. This is very positive, but as you say, you know, they still look to Venezuela and they still look to Cuba as, points of inspiration, but as you say, naive, isn't it? It's naive, and this is a, you know, this is a tough old world out there, especially when you've been isolated for so long from the realities and the immediate communication, that's everything, and it's a hard one, but... let's go back to the beer a second. I mean, very interesting to hear these things. So how much beer are you producing at the moment?
At the moment, there's about 1,500 liters produced per month.
Which, wow, it's a good amount.
Yeah, it's going well. Let's say it's much less than required, because the demand for it is just growing every day. We get orders and orders. And we urgently need to develop our productive capacity. But the money we make the project makes with those 1,500 liters is about enough to pay wages and reinvest to make the beer. And so we really need a capital investment. But we haven't looked for private investors, because we don't want anybody kind of end up owning, being the owner of the business or the enterprises, the non-profit. We want it to be a non-profit and a non-individualistic organization, and we want it to stay that way, so that nobody can kind of own the most of the company and decide what to do and get profit when we want this profit to go into the community, not only into the ex-park, but into the region where it's being made and sold, and hopefully in the long term we see the potential of creating more breweries, more small breweries around Colombia. We get orders from Barranquilla, we get orders from Cali, we get orders from Medellin, basically all over. They all want the beer, and it's selling really well. And so at the moment that we've undertaken a crowdfunding campaign. And if you look us up, I'll probably send you the links if you could help us putting it up in your page. for our crowdfunding. We have a Patreon and a Backy, which are platforms for crowdfunding, where you can donate some money, and you can get some nice things in return, like T-shirts. With after a certain amount, you can get a workshop, a beer, a craft beer.
That sounds like it.
Workshop, in the region in Nicolás.
That's very cool indeed. It's
yeah, it'd be, and, yeah.
I have a question for you. It's like, this sounds very, you know, the business sounds very much like the FARC politics when they, you know, came out of the jungle. And it's like, you know that they want to work in local grassroots politics. This sounds very much like what they want and what have been planning on doing. It sounds very interesting to.
Yes.
So where in, let's say in Bogota, where can we get
Bogota,
it?
There's quite a few bars now that have it. Almost all the time, although it runs out, as I say, that our production is limited and the demand is going up, so it runs out very quickly. There's a little shop, like a Whole Food shop in the center of Bogota, in the Centro Internacional, actually, for anybody who's passing by the Centro Internacional in Bogota, just on the Septima with 28. There's a little place there called, what's it called? Fair. As in Fair Play. They have it for sale. And there's another bar. There's a couple of bars in La Candelaria. There's a Café Casa de Citas, which have Roja commonly. Yeah. And there's Café Pushkin. Café Pushkin has got a Russian theme to it and kind of close to the ideology, and it's a nice place to visit. Actually, I recommend it. The food is very good, also, and the prices are good, are easy. Where else? The Café Cinema is another place in the 19 with Tercera, Las Aguas. There's a Café Cinema where they often have La Roja. There's a bar in La Soledad, 39 with 25, Lubyanka.
So Lubyanka, Pushkin.
Yeah, it's quite a few bars where you can find it.
What's a regular price for this beer?
It's between 7,000 to 8,000, depending on the place where you buy it. If you buy directly from us, we give you a special price if you buy more than a case, you know. The price is much easier if you buy wholesale.
Yeah, definitely. So what we can do then is you send me all those details and we'll throw them up on the Facebook page and on Twitter and everything else, and hopefully get some more people to sign up on Patreon and fund you a little bit more, because it sounds like you need to expand business. I mean, it sounds like you've got a success story on your hands.
Thank you, Richard. Yes, we think so as well. We think this beer is going to really help the reincorporation, the process of, and it's giving great morale to the people to see how, as I told you before, that to see how well received, and it's many people go to Econonso, to the area where they are, because they want to just to get a few beers, because sometimes they run out in Bogota, so they go all the way. It's like 4 hours from Bogota, you know, they go for a beer.
Wow. And that's a long way for a beer.
And but the view is amazing, and it's a lovely weekend out. There's accommodation if people want to stay and come and visit. We're also promoting the tourism through the beer. We want to get craft beer tourism going up there also, as well as ecotourism, because the place is so beautiful. So everybody's welcome to visit.
Can I take my four-year-old son? Is it appropriate?
Absolutely. There's lots of kids, as I tell you. At the moment, the population in that area is about 250 or 300 adults, ex-combatants, and about 90 little kids. 90, yeah. It's about one-third of the population is little children between 0 and 3.
I did.
Yeah, you enjoy it.
I think you should be promoting family tourism out there.
Also, definitely. Yes.
Yeah, right.
And food is...
Well, we'll see if my wife will let me do this.
So, yeah, you can convince her. Sure, I'll send you some photographs so you can convince her.
Definitely. Well, listen, thank you so much for taking these moments out of your day. I know you're busy at the Externado University teaching English and, of course, running around getting this beer done. And I know you're making the sales at the various bars and you're so fundamentally involved. It's got to be you've got to be working at breakneck speed doing all of this. It's, you know, it's quite inspirational, in fact, all of this work. So, listen, thank you for the time. And at some point, I hope to get my hands on a La Roja beer. Well, save I guess when one. I come back save to Bogota, you. I'll find it. Yeah, save me one so I don't have to go to Tolima just yet. It's still a long way away, especially from where I am right now. But we're here to promote. We're here to help. And we believe that this is the kind of thing that should be done. These small enterprises, you know, we've got to support this, especially if it's grassroots and going back into the community. Surely this is a good thing. So let's take this moment, everybody here, and thank Wally Broderick for his time and this, you know, entrepreneurial spirit. You're most welcome, Wally. And hopefully, before 150 episodes are up next, we'll have you back on telling us about the expansion into various other regions in Colombia.
I'm sure it will be so, okay? Yeah, so I look forward to it, and big hug to everybody, and thanks a lot for your time. All the best.
Thank you very much. Thank you. We've been talking to Wally Broderick, who's, you know, one of the, I guess what you say is the sort of the team behind La Roja beer, which is put together and made in the next FARC camp or the transitional zones, reintegration zones, training zones, whatever they're called today. Get your hands on some of it in bars in Bogota, or go onto the Patreon site and throw some money at it and get some beer merchandise. We'll put up all the websites there. And, well, congratulations to Wally Broderick and all the team. And, of course, Adriano, who seems to be the guy in charge up there in the camp. Really fascinating to talk about this. But this has been episode 285 of the Colombia Calling podcast. I'm Richard McCall, signing off from here in Mompox today. Next week, we hope to have someone on with a science background, talking a bit about science journalism and science in Colombia, and, well, you know, some new projects and advances in the fields of science here. So thank you again for listening. That's me signing off, and goodbye.
For the ones who get it done, the most important part is the one you need now. And the best partner is the one who can deliver. That's why millions of maintenance and repair pros trust Grainger, because we have professional-grade supplies for every industry, even hard-to-find products. And we have same-day pickup and next-day delivery on most orders. But most importantly, we have an unwavering commitment to help keep you up and running. Call, click Grainger.com, or just stop by. Grainger, for the ones who get it done.